said you wanna be a legend. A statement, a statement, a star. You said you wanna be a legend.
Welcome back to The Let Out, a legendary podcast. I'm your host, Mikel Street. Though Legendary Season 2 has wrapped, the culture keeps going. So this week, we're giving you a special episode dedicated to the movie The Legend of the Underground, an HBO original documentary. The film follows a group of youth challenging ideas of gender, conformity, and civil rights in Nigeria. It will premiere on HBO Max on June 29th. In anticipation of the release, we sat down with Nneka Onwuah and Giselle Bailey to chat about how they found this story, their role as filmmakers, and working in Nigeria. Hey, Nneka, how are you?
I'm good.
Good. Hey, Giselle, welcome to The Let Out.
Oh, thank you. Excited to be here.
So I was able to watch The Legend of the Underground, which is amazing. And obviously, I had a lot of thoughts about it, and I knew that you guys had been working together for a little while. So I wanted to just sort of start by asking, how did you guys start working together in general?
Well, Giselle and I met on the show My House. Giselle had already been working on the pilot before it even came out. And through an executive that I used to work with, she was like, there's this show. It sounds perfect for you. You just did this film, The Same Difference. This series feels like it's like authentic to you. So I went to an interview and I met with Sean Johnson, who was a showrunner at the time. And he showed me the sizzle that Giselle had created along with Niharika and some of her other team there. And so I looked at the sizzle and I was like, oh my God, like I have to get this job. And I was like, who made this? Like my energy just was so drawn to it creatively. I was like, this feels like something similar to what I would do. I was like, I have to work on it. And then Sean told me, he was like, there's this girl named Giselle here. She worked on this. She'll be working with you on this. You'll be in the field. She'll probably be in post in the field sometimes. And we went downstairs and then there she was, Giselle Bailey. And from there, we had 2 weeks of pre-pro and we had to figure out how we were going to, what story are we going to tell? They already had picked the people.
A 10-episode story.
10-episode story in 2 weeks. It was about to be Christmas and Giselle had already like cast people like that they wanted. They had Precious, they had Tati, they had Jelani, Alex, and probably like Justin LaBeja as well at the time. He wasn't who we ended up with, but he was a part of it. And so they were like, can you speak to these people? I said, yeah. And I met Giselle and that's kind of like how our bond started. We are creative soulmates.
And so for people who are listening who maybe don't know, My House followed a few people from specifically the New York City ballroom scene. And yeah, like you said, Tati, we talked to Tati our last episode, actually, because of Legendary. She was on Legendary. We talked to her about My House. And Giselle, like, what was it for you that sort of like cemented this sort of partnership?
I think that, you know, of all the people that I've worked with and even better than I can do, Nneka has a way of really connecting with people in a very short period of time and moving them so much that they're willing to do the hardest thing in the world, which is be vulnerable. She's done that with me and it's made me stronger and better as an artist and as a director. And she does that with everybody that she meets. And so it makes her really, really an incredible director, an incredible person to do interviews. And she gets into the heart of the matter like no one else really can. And so I think that with that really special, unique kind of energy, and then with me bringing kind of my aesthetic to it as well, we've created a really strong bond. And actually also, we also work with Stephen Bailey, who also shot a lot of those balls. So he also was a DP on The Legend of the Underground.
I want to get specifically into Legend of the Underground in a second, but can you talk to me a little about how you guys work together? Like, what is it like both directing on a project together?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that also from My House, we wanted to do things internationally. And I think part of what our bond is built on is that we both have a very kind of international heritage and upbringing. Nneka through her father, who's Nigerian. And then I'm Jamaican. I came here when I was about 8, but I moved around a lot before coming to this country. So I think we were also really drawn to the idea that there's kind of an international community blossoming, a Black queer international community blossoming. And I think our love for that and wanting to make sure that that story is told and gets into the lexicon of like Black history is part of what bonds us. But I would say that I'm the introvert. I'm the quiet one. I use my eye. She uses her mouth. I do a lot of concepting, design. How is something going to look? How is it going to feel? I speak like an artist. I need Neka to translate for me. And sometimes she needs me to translate for her, depending on who we're talking to. I also love post. I love kind of putting together the puzzle pieces at the end. Like, how are we going to make all of this come together? We have a lot of like graphic sequences and stuff like that in The Legend of the Underground. So that was definitely like a love of mine bringing that in. But truly, I think that, you know, the ballroom, this community, all of these, the underground community, these are all communities that I've never had and always wished that I had. You know what I mean? And so even though I'm the shy kind of quiet one of the two, it brings me so much joy to also be there and present for the filming and work with people to create portraits of who they are and who they see themselves to be, aside from how other people see them. So that's what I do. Neka, tell the people what you do.
Yeah, the way we work together, I think the greatest differentiation is, like she said, the eyes and the mouth. We both conceptualize from the beginning because it's almost like we speak our own language. Giselle and I barely have to talk to each other to understand. Here's the creative vision. We both have a philosophical, spiritual lens that we tell stuff from. Mine's is very radical. Giselle's is abstract, but we're saying the same exact thing. And so I think that I spend a lot of time on interviews, bringing out the story in the field. I'm with the people. I'm in their house. I get in bed with them. Like, we build relationship. We're spending time. I really feel like we're like the stereotypical mom and dad. Like, you know how like mom is really in the details, making sure these things, like, are they fed? Is this like really meticulous? And I'm in there. I come in and like try to rile everyone up. Hey, sit down over there. Let's talk about this. Don't do that. Like, I'm very much more that person, but we both conceptualize. She's bringing her directing and the edit very well, even though I give notes and stuff like that. And then in the field, I'm directing the crew and the physical production of it. So that's how we work together. But the magic is just brilliant when you have the soul of the piece and then the eyes, and they're both very sophisticated and deep and complex. And then we come together and that's like a Nala Films project.
Legend of the Underground actually starts and is really interspersed with these clips from this underground radio show. And I actually want to play a clip from, you know, the clips that you guys started the film with.
So, hi guys, what's up? It's Olutimi Olukayode, and this is Quercity Podcast.
Coming to you live from Nigeria's underground scene. This is your one and only source for community news.
How did you guys actually find this radio show? And I know you were talking about Twiggy and in that video, but how did that go from, you know, Kenya to finding this underground radio show in Nigeria?
Well, for the underground radio show specifically, we were trying to find something to bridge the gap between all of the people we were following, because we're following this asylum story in New York City and Harlem specifically. Then we're following these boys in Nigeria from different parts of the community, different social economic statuses and all over the place in Nigeria. And we're like, how do we bridge this? And so I saw online a Queer City podcast that tells the stories of all of the community, underground community in Nigeria. And I was like, this boy is already telling so many of the boys' stories. And one big thing about Giselle and I, we like for the people to be able to tell the stories themselves. We are just a conduit to allow them, and we help construct, but we want them to tell their own stories. And what we noticed is the media in Nigeria specifically paints a picture and depicts the community in a certain way. And we were like, we need to find someone who gives the community a voice from the community perspective. So when we found Timmy and the podcast, we were like, this is so dope because we can have an explanation. Like, when you look at Paris is Burning or something like that. They explain the balls. They explain, you know, the different houses. And I'm like, who's going to do this for us? Me personally, and I believe Giselle feels the same too, do not like sit down interviews like that. So we were like, we want to tell this story without sitting down, explaining and showing. So how can we do that? And so we thought through Timmy already speaking to people from the community, let's just capture that moment and enhance what that kind of looks like. We're seeing how Timmy's telling the story. So how do we up the underground feel into the space that's already happening?
Yeah, because I think in documentaries, a lot of the time people feel that you're just going to be told a story about something that exists. Whereas in a movie, when you go to see a movie, you're experiencing what exists. And we wanted this to be a movie where you're experiencing what exists, but it's factual and it's real. And therefore, it's a documentary. So I think that Timmy was a really perfect way to help us do just that.
What also worked about Timmy is that Timmy is out as a pansexual, non-binary person. And there's, you know, the law in Nigeria, but it's less about identity and more about the acts that are happening. And so Timmy was very bold and like, this is who I am. People know who I am. I've gotten sent to conversion therapy. My family, by my birthday, if I don't change the way I identify, then basically they would kick me out the house. I'm trying to finish college, all of that stuff. And he felt so bold and he exemplified some of the people we wanted to amplify. So once we seen Tim, we were like, oh my God, this is great because we could get the real stories. Sometimes it's hard because there's a lot of fear, and rightfully so, around just being in Nigeria and being able to express yourself in a specific way without being categorized or punished. So Timmy was like perfect and he was so open.
Is the show available like everywhere?
Yeah, it's online. I think it's Queer City Podcast on Instagram, and there's a link to the podcast there. I know right now anyone can go hear it from online, but I know that Timmy specifically is trying to get Google and get, you know, some buy-in so he could have a more official podcast and radio show that would be available globally and get the support for production because he's paying for his own stuff. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Did you get the sense that the community itself, like in Nigeria, was it meant a lot?
The radio platform does mean a lot to the community in Nigeria. It's just beginning. Mm. So he was at the beginning of it. Now it's been a few years. We've been making this movie for over 3 years. So it's grown since. But when we first got there, it was just starting and it was the first time they had a space. So like a lot of the places we were back in like the 60s, 50s, you know, 70s is where Nigeria kind of is right now. So that's what was interesting about it, is that we were in the beginnings of the formulation of spaces that never existed. This is all the first time for them.
Yeah. There's a few central characters and I want to talk about a few of them, but you guys really sort of started with Michael here in New York City. And I just wanted to hear a little about like how you guys met Michael, how that's where he became part of the project.
Sure. I'll start. So I was going to New York City Pride with New York Health and Hospitals. My sister-in-law is the CEO of Harlem Hospital. And so she was like, we want to invite everybody, you know, to be inclusive, to come walk with us. And so I was walking with New York City Health and Hospitals at the Pride Parade because, like, I really wanted to walk Pride that year. I had just came from the White House. Orlando had happened. Obama made the announcement. So, like, all of this stuff is going on. And I was torn with the same difference at the time. I said, I want to be a part of Pride. I want to walk. So I went. It was my first time walking in Pride. And I hear a Nigerian song behind me. And I'm like, is that a Nigerian song? And then I turn around and I was like, is that a Nigerian flag? And then I saw the Nigerian flag and I said, get out of here. So I walked over to this guy and his name is Abraham. And I walked over to him and I said, are you Nigerian? He was like, yeah. I said, I'm Nigerian too. I was like, there's gay people in Nigeria? And this is talking about people in the U.S. And he was like, yes, there are many of us or whatever. And then next to him was Michael. So at the time, I didn't talk much to Michael. I had spoken to Abraham and we took a picture with the Nigerian flag and the rainbow flag together. I left New York City Health and Hospitals and I just walked with my people because I could not believe, I never knew any existed. And my dad's Nigerian. So this meant so much to me. I felt like, wait, I'm not like that different. There's like more of us. So that happened, moved on. I live in Harlem and L.A., but I was living in just Harlem at the time. I went to this restaurant called Sion Cafe to get some Ethiopian food. I sat in the restaurant and this guy named Deji, who's in the film, was my waiter. And he sees my check and he's like, your name is Naka? He was like, that's Igbo. He said, that's Nigerian. And I was like, yeah, my dad's Nigerian. I said, but I probably never get to go back there, just being sarcastic. And he was like, oh, I'll never get to go back there either because I'm seeking asylum. And so we kind of laughed and joked. He, you know, brought back my check for me to sign. He was like, hey, I'm having a party. Do you want to come? And I was like, yeah. So I said, yeah, but then I got busy. So my plan was to not go. And then he just kept texting me. And I was like, I asked my friend Naya, I said, yo, do you want to go to this party with me? It's in Harlem. Like, I should just go. Like, it's right here. And she was like, yeah, let's just go. It's 2 blocks away. And I was like, okay. So we walk. We go into this house, this like townhouse in Harlem. And we walk upstairs. I'm not kidding you. It had to be about 40 to 50 Nigerians who were all a part of the community that identified differently. And they had egusi soup and pounded yam and all of this African food that I grew up with. And I was like, yo. And then Michael was there, and Michael was like, I saw you at the Pride parade. And then Deji was there. So, and then Abraham was there. So everybody that I met at that Pride separately was at this party. So then I found out there's this whole underground network of people. So when Giselle brought up the idea to do this film in Nigeria, we actually, I introduced her to them. They cooked for us and they started just telling us stories. And Giselle actually took all the information from those conversations, and she began to build relationships with people out in Nigeria. After my house, we decided we were going to do another project together. And she came to Puerto Rico with me. I went to do a Dee Reese film out there with Anne Hathaway and Ben Affleck, and Giselle came. And after I got off set at night, we would just work. And during the day, she would be on Skype talking to all the people in the community.
Giselle, what was the important thing to tell about Michael's story specifically? Because obviously you guys go, there's a lot there.
Yeah, I think it's all the things that you would never think about if you hadn't been through what he'd been through. If you hadn't had to leave your friends behind, if you hadn't had to make a new way for yourself in a completely new culture, you know, basically build a new identity. I think he helped us kind of describe the complexity of what it feels like to both be asylee and also what it feels like to return home and, you know, not necessarily have your community fully embrace you anymore because you've changed and they've changed. You know what I mean? That's, I think, a very hard and lonely feeling. And I think we all can identify with that. And so I think it was important just for people to be able to empathize with what that kind of thing feels like. We don't hear those stories very often. And then also it was important to show the power to work through that and do it anyway, you know?
Yeah, that dinner scene where he comes back and he just keeps saying, I'm Nigerian.
Yeah.
That was a lot for me. But obviously you guys filmed him in Harlem, but you also went to Nigeria. And earlier we were talking about, like, it is the act that's criminalized, but, you know, people are threatened and there's things that happen regardless whether or not you are actually in the act. So I just wanted to hear a little bit about what was it like filming in Nigeria and, you know, were there concerns around safety? Obviously, there was a really tense moment that I don't think you guys captured. I think it was like security footage, but just prepping to film in Nigeria, what was that like?
Prepping to film in Nigeria was very difficult. There was two things at play. One thing was there was like an election happening at the time, which is a very dangerous time to go into these countries.
Just because there's like political unrest.
Yeah, there's political unrest. And, you know, like they're very conscious about the media being out there. So there was that. Then the other thing at play was I hadn't been back to Nigeria since I was 6 years old. And I was going there as myself now, publicized as a director. And I almost was like, it was almost like how you feel when you come out in the beginning all over again. It's almost like I went through another phase because I've already done this in America. Now I have to go to Nigeria where I have family who, you know, are political out there, and I have to go make a movie. And then, you know, like we were concerned making sure we keep people safe and we are able to shoot them while, you know, still keeping their discretion at the same time. And so that was very scary. It was very scary for all of us. And it was very scary for me because what was at stake was my family as well. And then also just, you know, it was our first film in Africa, really. There was also the vulnerability of, you know, being we're just starting our company. So we're like literally building our company, filming this, building relationships, and all very quickly. So that was difficult. But what was difficult being there is just the political unrest at the time and the fact that, you know, the community really decided as a collective that they were going to tell their stories and show their faces. That's so scary. It's the scariest thing in the world because it's almost like you have to have a pact to decide to, hey, now's the time for a civil rights movement. And that's, you know, they dealt with that at Stonewall here, but it kind of just happened. Now with this film, I think even just, you know, speaking for me, it just like really, that was just a fear. And so I was making that, but I was in a scared place at the time.
Was the fear, was it sort of around, you know, because as a journalist, I have this sometimes. So I wonder if it was around people being willing to put themselves out there and put their faces out there and then you having the responsibility to make sure it's done right or?
Yes. Yes. I had full confidence that we would tell the story with great taste and make sure we protect as people as much as possible, but we can't control the world. And so we needed to be ready to support the community at large for whatever we're doing. And it's like, it's a partnership. Like any project that we do, we still have relationships with everybody. Like Tati was just at our house. We did my house years ago. Alex just called me the other day. We really build family with these people. And so that was what we were doing with the people in Nigeria. And we have to like say we're linking arms, we're standing hand in hand with all of the main people who are a part of the film. And we also had to keep Michael calm. Michael hadn't seen his family in years. We went to his mom's house for the first time and he hadn't seen his mom or talked to her in years. And he had gotten like crazy stuff happening to him before he left. So it was like he's going back for the first time. You empathize. You kind of sit in the hearts of the people that you tell their stories. And so that kept us up all night.
I was told that you guys made sure that the crew was all Black. And I just wanted to talk about sort of the importance of that for you all.
Yeah, we definitely had an all Black crew, and a lot of those people are, again, like family to us, I would say, extended family, some actual family. I think it was important for us, one, to, you know, we also oftentimes feel alien in our own crews when we're the only Black person in them. And I know that on the other side of it, when you're the only Black person in the room and the crew is all white, it's just a different dynamic. The storytelling is going to be different. What you can give and what you feel is understood is completely different. And so it was important for us that we made everyone feel as comfortable as possible and that we are really building a company and a culture of telling our own stories.
Yeah, and I was going to add to what you said with that. There's this like thing where people try to be like, oh, you poor Africans, in the narrative. And it's always in the details of how people shoot stuff, what music they choose, sad music. We said, nah, we're going to Nigeria. We're going to show the fun, the boldness, even with the opposition. Like, we're not going to paint Nigeria as just a negative place. It's a beautiful place with beautiful music, beautiful people. And we needed people to have an understanding of our culture and come from where we come from in order to tell that. Our associate producer was from Nigeria and she worked with us. Her name is Katie Mark. And she really helped us navigate Nigeria, the people, pre-interviewed people, spent time with people before we got there and connected with us. And then we had Orion Gordon. He's a Black sound guy. He's from Trinidad. And he worked on my house and we loved him. And so he came, we brought him with us. Stephen Bailey is brilliant. He worked on my house as well, but he's also Giselle's brother. And he's my heart. Like, he's my heart. Love him to death. And we pushed for a look. We pushed to become a family. We said, no matter what we do, we're sticking together through this. And when you have it like family, that's how the content comes out. You could tell the difference between I'm looking into something versus I'm a part of something and we're in this together.
And also, I want to learn something about myself. I think that's another commonality as Black people going into really any country in Africa, especially West Africa. It was like, there's a different level of really earnest wanting to know more, wanting to learn, wanting to connect, wanting to know more about who we are. And that's completely different, I think.
But also in Nigeria, so we talked about Michael, but in Nigeria, one of the central characters was James Brown, who went viral after a mass arrest of people who were perceived to be homosexual. So I want to play a little bit from the section of you guys introducing him.
Let's go that way. They said they arrested you guys for being part of an initiation group into a gay whatever.
No, I don't know anything about that.
Saturday was my birthday, no. They just came, brought everyone out together in the premise, and they started taking us out.
The definition of a gay is when you are caught having sexual intercourse with a guy, and they didn't cut me. Did they cut me? Ask the police, but did they cut me?
My name is Obiano James. Go to YouTube, type James Brown, you will see. I'm a cultural dancer, I dance.
What's this? I'm a dancer. I come to perform. Simple as that. I'm a dancer.
Sharp mouth.
I repeat myself.
Aggressiveness.
Yes, no. They were not expecting this from him.
I was not caught on the arts. That is the law, isn't it? That's the law. When you are caught in the arts, I'm not caught in any arts. I came to perform. It's a crime.
So why don't you keep your breath when you get to court? I expect that by now you should show a little remorse. You are not showing any remorse.
Nigeria is so corrupt. I wish I got to be here. I was
going. I like you.
Yes, sir.
You did the right job.
Can you guys talk to me a little bit about how you found James and why it was important to sort of include his story in this film?
I mean, the audacity. It made us drop our phone. It made us laugh. It made us impassioned. It made us what? I mean, it's just like, it's unbelievable. It's unforgettable. He just instantly is all of those things. And I think we were on the train, right, Nika?
Yeah, we were on a train and we were on our phones because, like, you know, you could get service in New York City. So we're just on the train. We had already started the movie and we're on there and 50 Cent had reposted someone and we heard about the arrest in Nigeria. We're like, whoa, this is another confirmation that we are supposed to do this movie because where'd that come from? In the train station, we go and James was like, you know, I was not caught in the act. Being homosexual is da 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 da, and they didn't caught me. And so his sassiness caught my attention. I was like, boy, you are really out there carrying right now. And I loved it. I relate to that boldness. Like, I feel like it was like, he was like, show me my opponent. Like, there's nothing that you caught me doing. I was just partying, which is the truth. He wasn't really, you know, they just picked people and assumed something about them based on their perceptions. And so we thought that that was a great entryway into the story of what's happening because it was right now, it was right then. And 50 Cent reposted it. It was just all funny. Even he calls himself James Brown and we asked him why he calls himself James Brown. What did he say? He said,
he was like, I just like the color brown.
So it has nothing to do with him dancing,
right?
Any connection to the singer, the deceased James Brown. So we were just like, And so he was so funny. And so I'm a big spiritual person. And so I would see this particular number when I feel like my ancestors or something are telling me to do something. And when we were in Nigeria, we were like going to meet up with him to see if like this was a good fit. And we pulled up in the van to where James was at. And that it was that exact time. And I looked at Giselle. I said, uh-oh. I said, this is going to be something. This is right. We went in there and it was not only James, but like you see that scene in the movie where we kind of introduce the safe house and, you know, the house of Allure. And when you go in there, you see all the people. That's what we saw. Like you're seeing raw, like the day that we first met James Brown in there. And it was just beautiful. It was like, wow, this community in here is beautiful. They're so talented. They have so many, you know, aspirations, makeup, dance, singing, rapping. We couldn't even put it all in there. Someone was baking. It was like crazy. They were all eating together. They were like twerking in front of the TV. It was like, what is this? And again, that feeling of home, like James' interview, I did laying down sideways on the bed. So that's why he's kind of like laying there. And I took my shoes off and I laid down on the bed. It was the most comfortable I felt in Nigeria the whole time. Because I felt uncomfortable most of the time because of fear. But I felt when I got to that safe house, I felt like I could breathe. And I felt like these are my people. And we had to get James, not only because of the boldness, but the tone of the film. When you stick to specific stories, it can make it feel very sad. And James brought life to it. He's facing a real court case that was present at the time that went on for years and years. This just ended recently. We started this in 2018. And then also he has humor. He has confidence. He's smart. He was philosophical and had wisdom. And I felt like he represented a lot of what we wanted to say. And he was bold enough. He was the person who was bold enough to fight for everybody. And even though people saw him as someone who they thought maybe is just an uneducated person because of the way he spoke and his diction, I saw a brilliant philosophical freedom fighter that is the first icon of Nigerian nonconformist community, and we captured it.
You mentioned the House of Allure. Do you know if the house was sort of affiliated with the International Ballroom House of Allure, or if, you know, do you know if there's any connections there?
Well, let me caveat that. I can't say for sure, but I'm pretty certain there is no affiliation. I think that there definitely is a inspiration. You know, they definitely are aware of ballroom, looking at ballroom. You can see some of the even, and there are like a couple moments, some moves that you'll catch between twerking that you can see there's ballroom definitely impacting that space as well. But I don't think that they've actually like officially connected and
kind of. They're out there watching RuPaul's Drag Race, Empire from
Pose.
Some
they
websites.
Pose.
They watch Pose from they were some website. Pose. So they like they want to have a Nigerian's RuPaul's Drag Race there. So they like they're getting things from online. So it's influence because they don't have it, but now they do.
Yeah, that's Yomi's Dream, who did Mr. You'll see he runs Mr. Ideal. He's a lawyer and he's also a dancer. And that's his like major dream, to have an African RuPaul's Drag Race.
You're sort of saying this is like inspiration, but like when you think about it, like what you were describing, this idea of a safe house really goes back to the origins of ballroom, right? And like even the way that it still functions today in some cities and for some people, that it really is supposed to be the safe space more than voguing, more than, you know, competition. It is a space for people who need it and need to be around like-minded people.
Absolutely.
In the radio show, at one point, you know, the people in Nigeria discussed James himself and, you know, they had been arrested with James and their thoughts about James. So I want to play a quick clip of that. And then I want to chat a little bit about, you know, what they were talking about.
There was this person who went viral when you guys were arrested, a guy called James Brown. Do you all know him?
Yeah.
How did you guys feel about James Brown's popularity and fame in the process of your litigation and being in prison?
Let me just say, he became a celebrity overnight.
Okay.
It affected me at home.
The video was everywhere. And you know, when they're showing his video, I was at his back.
Yeah.
Understand? So my face, I felt ashamed of myself. What he's doing, the painting and the rest of the drag, the cross-dressing is just giving them, this like, is what I am, yeah, okay? Like this is what I am. This is what you're pointing. This will Nigeria understand. It can start that after the case.
After the case.
When the case
not
is
like the case
dead.
Dead. Like,
forgotten and
well, guys,
gone.
Can I ask
understand?
You all this question? Do you guys feel James represents you all? Like, is he a proper representation of what you guys want to look like?
No.
So how important was it for you all to include this conversation, you know, inter-community conversation about James?
For stories that we tell about the community, multifaceted stories that have complexity are important to us because one person doesn't represent a whole community. And I think that the nuance of that is important. Like, because sometimes, because we have such little representation, the one person you see, people who are not a part of the community assume that that is everyone. Everyone's like that. If, you know, if lesbians mostly drive trucks and drink beer, you know what I'm saying? Something like that. They might assume that if you present as a masculine lesbian, then that means, you know, I want to play basketball and drink beer. When I'm like, I took ballet class and I drink wine. I would never touch a beer. So I don't want people to assume that this is how all lesbians are. And I think in James' case, it had to do with the fact that it's like people are going to assume that because James is like this, we're all like this. Everybody at that party, just because they were perceived as homosexuals does not mean they were homosexual. So I think they felt like it wasn't fair that the one representation that the media is catching on to is just him because everyone's not just like him. And that, you know, they felt like that put them more in danger.
It's interesting because I think that we have those have had and will continue to have those conversations about our representations here in the States, right? Where people are sort of saying, you know, this person is a bad representation because I don't feel represented by this person. And everyone's going to assume, sort of like you're saying. But I feel like what we have learned over the years is that they are not bad representations. And the problem is not them being a representation. The problem is just that there are so few representations that that's the only one. And so it's interesting to me to see in the project, you guys go through this process of presenting different types of representation, some that don't agree with others, some that also respect, like, I understand that's what he's going to do, but like, that's not how we do it over here. And so I was wondering, how important was it for you guys to make sure to have these pops of different, essentially archetypes, right?
Yeah, I think it's incredibly important, but it's also exactly what we were going through. We were giving you what we were going through, what we were experiencing it, and not trying to flatten it. It's complex. You know, what we're trying to do is complex. People are going to feel all different ways about it. You know, they did as we were doing it, they'll do after the fact. Same with the people in the film. Each person has their own idea of how to move forward, what the ideal looks like. And all those voices are important for the community, to build a community. It can't, you know, it's not that it has to have just one voice or one type of person or one type of archetype. And I think also that was part of the qualms people had with the representation they were facing in Nigeria, you know, and they wanted to, like everyone should, show all the complexity of human nature, because that's really all that it is. And I think that it's important that we serve that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And also, I feel like you're telling a story from your own perspective. Like, I think something that's important to address, too, is like, as queer women, we want to tell the story of women even. You know, when we went out there and it was so hard to get the women to come out as much. We had some in the scene where you see people talking about kind of what they're facing in that group setting. But it was kind of difficult to get the whole voice of the female identified community to come out. However, because we were talking about the case of the 57 men and Michael going back, we focused more on whatever was attached to those people's stories. So it's like we really had to hone in on specific voices and do a survey of the community. And I think that it was important that we got to see those different perspectives. So by that, you know, by the time people see this, they get to see like a cornucopia of different beings in Nigeria.
Do you guys know the state of James's? I know he was seeking asylum towards the end of the documentary. Do you guys know the state of that?
He wasn't necessarily seeking asylum. He was considering seeking asylum. So it was really like, for him, that moment in time was a lesson in what the stakes could be for him if he decided to come to the United States. Mm. By the end of filming, he was very much decided that he's going to stay and he's going to fight. And I think that as things evolve, we'll see how that shifts. But as of right now, he has no intention to leave.
After watching the documentary, what, and I would love each of you to answer this, what do you guys hope that people take from it?
I hope that people take from it, number one, sexuality and gender expression are not the same thing. Two, you are not alone. You exist. There's somewhere where someone looks like you, thinks like you, feels like you. There's a community out there for all of us. And I feel like the whole point was, and I know you might have seen this in the film where we talk about Aria Scatter, who was a crossdresser back in the 70s. That's the only evidence that we have of someone existing in the community that's not just written in some book or something. And so the fact that these legacies need to be told is like, we need to actually show, have somewhere to show that we exist for future and future generations. So we hope that people just know that they exist and there's more like them. Just like I found out that there was Michael and Abraham and James, and that they were nonconformist in their fluidity of how they expressed their gender. I felt seen. I felt like I had a family. And so we want people to feel like they have a family. And then lastly, for me, I also want to demystify and debunk the myth that there's some demons in this community. It's family, it's friendship, it's fun. They're doing the same shit everybody else is doing. And I think that because if there's no visibility and then there's just stories around it, of course people are going to believe that there's this demon, it's demonic, and it's so horrible. This film is not about sexuality. It's about gender expression. People keep talking about sexuality and it's like, nah. Now that we can see that these people exist, you see that they're just like everyone else. And hopefully that helps create education in Nigeria that they're human, like James says. And so that's what I want specifically.
What about you, Giselle?
No, I agree. And beyond it not being about sexuality and being about fluidity, it's about identity and freeing yourself to really be exactly who you want to be. And I think that's a message for people with much lesser stakes, even them to be able to embrace and to take on. You know, I really want people to feel something, like not just think, but really feel something and feel something personally about who they are and how themselves they keep themselves kind of, I think, oppressed. I think there's a lot of kind of personal oppressive tendencies that we have, and we inflict that on other people because we're not good with ourselves. And I want people to really kind of dig that out of themselves when they see this film. You know, all of Nigeria was jeering at James and thought one thing. And then I hope that through this film, they really realize that there's so much depth, you know, to people. And it's so easy to flatten someone's identity, but there's usually far more complexity and far more that we have in common. So I hope they feel that.
And I think two things. One, I think God put James here. James is such an entertaining person that he can grab attention in a heartbeat. But I think he has that gift to really say something deeper. And I think that's what was always so beautiful about James is he'll be like, you know, one thing about life out of nowhere. And it'll be so profound. And then the next second he's like joking and talking shit. Like that's just attention grabbing. But he really has something deeper. And I think that was that balance. I think that goes with what she was saying about people learning that there's more to than meets the eye all the time. And then the other thing that I was going to say is that Giselle didn't mention is around the asylum story. Like everybody doesn't want to run. Every story is about what happens if you leave. And it's like, this is my home. Same thing happened with me with the Black church. They were trying to force me to choose God or my sexuality. And I was like, I'm both. Like, y'all are going to have to literally carry me out this church. Like, I'm with God for whatever. It's like, and I think that sometimes you just, like, leaving is not an option. And so what happens when you can't leave, and leaving is not always the ultimate solution. Sometimes it works for people and sometimes it doesn't. So what happens to the people who stay and fight? They have to find the freedom within. And so that's what this story is about, the freedom within.
Thank you guys so much for coming in and chatting with me here on The Let Out. I'm so much looking forward to watching the film again and hopefully chatting more about this in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much to Nneka and Giselle for telling these important stories. You can watch The Legend of the Underground on HBO Max beginning June 29th. I'm your host, Michael Street. You can find me at Michael Street on Instagram. For Spoke Media, our producer is Kelly Kauf with help from Hebron Mendez, Alicia Force, Brigham Mosley, Janielle Kastner, and myself. Original music and sound design by Evan Arnett. Special thanks to Clay Kim and Ariel Mejia. Our executive producers are Aaliyah Tavakolian and Keith Reynolds. This is Michael Street, and I'll catch you at the next ball.